This podcast replay is brought to you by Craig's Inns, Acura of Pembroke Pines, where you can get the TLX 2020 model for $209 a month, $29.99 due at signing, plus tax, tag, and registration. Check it out at 15601 Pines Boulevard.
All righty, it's a Tolentino Tuesday. And it's time to talk a little Dolphins and a lot of good stuff to talk about after the Dolphins took care of business against Jacksonville. You can follow Josh on Twitter at JCT Sports and catch his work right now at The Athletic, where they're still giving it to you right now, $1 a month. So for $12, you can get a whole year's coverage of all your local teams and all the great national stories that they're constantly breaking at The Athletic. Josh, good afternoon, my friend. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, my man, Big O. What's going on? You know, it took 2 months last year for the Dolphins to get that first dub, and, you know, they've got to be feeling good, but they can't celebrate for too long, you know, getting this first victory in week three because, you know, a very tough opponent coming to Miami this weekend.
Yeah, well, look at the dude you cover every day. You think that guy's going to allow them to actually enjoy it more than 24 hours? I'm sure they take like that heat attitude, like, okay, 24 hours and now we move on to the next opponent, that kind of stuff. I think Flo's one of those guys that's not going to sit on that. I mean, think about this. Look what happened last year after 0-7. They stayed in it and then they ended up 5-4. And you know, Josh, one of the things that I kept talking about when they were 0-2 was that it was a different 0-2 than last year. Last year at 102-10, you weren't competitive at all. This was an 0-2 that you were really competitive, and you could easily say you could have won both games if a couple things go your way, and you end up on the short end. And that's why last Thursday I picked them to win, because I thought they were primed to win, because they were playing good enough to win, something they weren't doing the first couple weeks of the season last year.
Yeah, definitely. I think specifically with that Bills game.
That's right.
That was very, very winnable. I mean, Josh Allen, he had, and you know, we're seeing as the weeks progress that Josh Allen's the real deal, that he's really, you know, stepping into himself in year three. But really, if the Dolphins secondary played any type of defense and didn't allow, you know, one of those four plus plays of 40 yards completions to, you know, various receivers, Stephon Diggs, that if they stop one of those, they probably win that game. So, you know, this team could be easily 2-1 as they are 1-2. So, but you bring up the culture, man. I'm loving that word, you know, getting acclimated still to the area. And, you know, I need to get myself a Miami Vice Heat jersey before the finals kick off, man. Cause I mean, this is such a fun team to watch right now. And even Flo is wearing, you know, Miami Heat gear in a lot of his, you know, availabilities when we see him on Zoom. So a very exciting time to be in town.
Yeah, man, no doubt about that. It's fun to see what's going on, and it's nice to see that Flo also is connected that way, where he is in that circle of giving, you know, a little love to the other teams, because I like that. I like that when there's synergy and there's support for each other. I think that's a really, really cool thing. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, Josh, is the offensive line, my brother. I mean, they have done an outstanding job. And considering how nervous people were about the Laremy Tunsil trade, and I kept explaining to most folks that you cannot turn down that trade. You have to take that trade when they're offering you 2-1s, 2, and they're going to take $8 million off your salary cap with Kenny Stills. You got to make that move, and they did. And people were worried, well, you know, a left tackle is hard to find. Well, it looks like they found one right away in Austin Jackson.
Yeah, it's great you bring that up, oh, because I'm actually I've got a pretty big Austin Jackson piece coming out here probably tomorrow, if not within the next 2 days for sure. But, you know, talking to a lot of his former coaches, USC, his background and just how prepared he was for this moment. You know, many are surprised, even him. We talked to Austin Jackson just yesterday afternoon, and he was talking about how he admits that last year, you know, his final year at USC, he was not the most consistent, you know, performer, that there were games where he was completely MIA and, you know, through three games this week, I mean, you look at what the offensive line is made of. Only one returning starter in Jesse Davis and four newcomers, two vets. Usually there's going to be chemistry issues. It doesn't matter how much experience is on that line. When there's that much turnover, there's going to be, you know, chemistry issues, communication issues. So far, I mean, they've only given up four sacks, and I mean, that's pretty good, you know, considering the mess that offensive line was last year.
Yeah, no, I've been incredibly impressed with them overall. What are you hearing about Byron Jones? I know it's hard to get information. What's your gut tell you? Because he wasn't placed on the IR, so they got to feel like he's about to return.
You know, I'm still not convinced that he's going to play on Sunday. I mean, they really do need him, especially against one of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL and Russell Wilson. But with Byron, I mean, you look at what he did in Dallas. I mean, he was a complete Iron Man. He literally only missed one game in over five seasons. And, you know, here we are. He's on the verge of missing, you know, essentially two or three here. In Miami. So you got to think that groin injury, you know, they didn't place him, like what you said, on the list. But, I mean, if he's close, you know, maybe we see him on Sunday, but I'm kind of more lenient on the other side that he might not be ready.
Why? What's your gut tell you?
Yeah, because, I mean, the significance of that injury is that, you know, groins are very tricky. It's like if you even – you know, even just on a, especially with their movement, with defensive backs and, you know, all that twisting and turning they have to do with their hips. I think the significant part of the injury is that this dude doesn't miss a game. I mean, he was nicked up and bruised up in Dallas. And I talked to, you know, some scouts and some of his former coaches over the past couple of days about, you know, does this dude really miss games? Like, I mean, does he not, I mean, what's his mentality? And he's, overcome a lot over the past five seasons, definitely some games he could have sat out. So I think the fact that he missed this past game shows that, hey, it might be significant.
I hope he's there for this week against a guy like Russell Wilson. It would be nice. Let me ask you something, Josh. On the other side of the ball, is there enough being said about Devontae Parker's toughness? Because last year he got a concussion, and then we were worried about, okay, here it goes again. He's going to be the injury-prone guy. And he left in the second half of a game, comes back the following week, which we thought he wasn't going to play because of the concussion, and he gets two touchdowns. And, you know, he fought through a couple of nicks and knacks last year. And then this year he's got the hamstring issue, and he has stayed on the field to help his team. And then you got Preston Williams on the other side coming back from knee surgery. And this is a baby still in this league because this kid only has half a year experience, you know, from last year. So he's basically playing the second half of his rookie year right now. And yet he's doing it on a knee that isn't 100%. I got to commend the toughness from both receivers, especially Devontae Parker, who has been so injury riddled for so many years and had that label. That, to me, in my eyes, he's kind of shed that label of the, you know, soft and never there. I see a tough guy now is what I see in Devontae
Parker. Yeah, when you look at the when the hamstring flared up in week one against New England, you know, he didn't come back in the second half. I had actually heard that following day, you know, they had actually looked into it and everything came back clean. So it's really just that mental hurdle of, you know, he knows that he's got some soft tissue injury history, risking it out there by, you know, giving 110%, which by the way, oh, you can clearly see that, as much of a warrior that Devontae is right now and that he's trotting out there, he's clearly not 100%. You know, the way he's getting out, off the line of scrimmage and really competing with those corners, you know, we know he's way more explosive than what we've seen these past 2 weeks. So it's clear he's not 100%, but I think it means a lot that he is getting out there, especially since Preston Williams kind of still is battling the same thing. Also a mental hurdle. I think it was a huge part of his development to get that touchdown this past week. Especially it was essentially kind of the same route that he dropped in week two versus the Bills. It was a slant route right at the goal line. This time he was able to catch it in much tighter coverage. So I think that will do a, you know, that's a big step moving forward for Preston in terms of confidence level.
Are you looking at the Dolphins like they have a chance this week against the Seahawks?
You know, it's going to be a fighting chance, though. I mean, any time that you see one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and not just that, we saw how much this Dolphins defense struggled to contain the hybrid quarterback in Cam Newton and Josh Allen. Well, you know, they got more of a pocket guy in Gardner Minshew in week three, and they were able to hit him 10 times, 4 sacks. Russell Wilson and Gardner Minshew are not the same. So Russell Wilson presents a much more tougher challenge, similar to the quarterbacks they saw in week two, and honestly, you know, better than those guys. So it's hard to see the Dolphins winning, but who knows? Maybe this defense, you know, gets that confidence they need in seeing that first dub, and also, you know, sacking Minshew a handful of times, and maybe they bring it on Sunday, maybe bring that juice and carry it over. But, you know, Russell Wilson, I think we've seen in these first few weeks that he's still one of the most elite quarterbacks in the NFL.
Now, do you know how bad Seattle's defense is?
Oh, we know they're bad, oh, and not just that, we know that they're hurt. Yeah. There's so many guys really on both sides that they're hurt. And you look at these next 2 weeks of the Dolphins' opponents, San Francisco the week after, Seattle this weekend. I mean, those are two winnable games, especially considering how banged up both teams are. Really just significant injuries to both teams on both sides of the ball. So
they've allowed
maybe that plays.
They've allowed 1,292 passing yards in the last three games. That's the most passing yards allowed in the first three games of an NFL season since 1950. And this is
I talked to Chan Gailey this morning, though, and you know, one of the funniest things that he said is that it's not against the rules to, you know, start the game with three scoring drives. And you know, I think our offense, once they saw that happen, once they, you know, had it happen on the field, that hey, it's not against the rules that we can score every drive. You know, let's go out and do it. So I think the confidence level of, you know, getting that first win and seeing rhythm and flow on both sides of the ball, attacking the quarterback with that front seven, you know, I think that does play a big role moving forward that, hey, we're 3 weeks in and we got that first victory after last year. It took 2 months.
Yeah, that's why I think, Josh, they actually have a chance this weekend against them, because if Fitz is able to pass the ball against these guys – And you know, not only the two receivers, but obviously Gesicki's playing out of his mind right now. He's playing great football. And Ford has really turned into a nice slot guy in the process. He's helped move the chain. And even I was looking at Jakeem Grant. He has caught every target that he's been, you know, thrown to. So things are pretty nice right now in that passing game. That this is actually an opportunity for the Miami offense to kind of build on what they did last week.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned Jakeem Grant. I think he had the best game of the season, of his season, this past Thursday in Jacksonville. You think back to that catch that he made, you know, a very diving type grab to a part where, you know, he wasn't on the field. That Fitz threw it short and he knew that Jakeem was going to make a play on the ball. And you know, he was. And not just that. After he caught the ball, you know, he still picked up 5-10 more yards after realizing he wasn't down. But one play I just want to talk about specifically with Jakeem is that Chan Gailey, he's showing some creativity. A lot of people were questioning, you know, the first 2 weeks about, is this the right guy? Well, not only did we see rhythm and flow in their first few drives against Jacksonville, we saw some new wrinkles, specifically with Jakeem on an end around, picked up 30 yards. They did a fake hand off to Matt Breida, then Fitz throws to Jakeem, or hands it off, I mean, in the backfield, and Jakeem goes the other way for 30 yards. So, and, you know, that also occurred on first down, so probably when the Jaguars weren't expecting it. So I think we're seeing a lot more from Chan Gailey, and like what you said, Jakeem Grant is starting to show out.
Josh Tolentino, by the way, for The Athletic, he joins us every Tuesday at this time at 12:30 to talk a little Miami Dolphins. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at JCT Sports. Before I continue with the Dolphins and Seattle, so you got your Rays winning it all? Is that what I saw on social media?
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, helping out a little bit with coverage. They've got, obviously, all the games start tonight for the postseason. I actually think the Marlins, you know, speaking, you know, since we're on this side of the state, this side of town, I think they've got a really good chance against this Cubs team. I'm not really convinced by that Cubs bullpen and their pitching, you know, being a Chicago native and seeing them over the past few years. So that was really the death of them last year. So I think the Marlins have a good chance to you know, go into Wrigley and upset them. But yeah, I think the Rays, they're kind of built for this season, though. It's a, you know, you think of all the creativity and analytics that goes into that team and just so much differences in this season that I think this is like their type of year to win it.
Yeah, I mean, hell, they won the division, which is impressive as hell. And in a season like this, this is actually the kind of season that the Rays could pull off. Yeah, you're probably right. This and it would be amazing, right? Because the Lightning won last night the Stanley Cup. Can you imagine if the Rays end up winning the World Series, and if Tampa Bay and the Bucks actually make a run for the Super Bowl? The people out there could be living life large, bro.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to Blake Snell last night, their game one starter tonight against Toronto. And, you know, he kind of expressed to me the same confidence that they've really had all year, that like every team across the league, they face a lot of injuries, but they feel like this is their type of year to win it with all the, you know, crazy scenarios and everything that they've gone through in terms of COVID protocols, that, you know, they're this crazy, wacky team in this crazy, wacky season. So, you know what? Maybe they might take it all.
Let's see, man. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm with you. I think the Marlins have a chance also because it's a three-game set. I don't even – the best team doesn't always win in a three-game set in baseball because that's baseball. In basketball and in football, if you had to play a three-game set, 95% of the time the better team is going to move on. But in baseball is the one sport that I could tell you the lesser team has an easier chance to pass in a three-game set because the Marlins have three young pitchers that are pretty talented. And if a couple of those kids come in dealing, you got yourself a shot, man.
Yeah, and I think we've seen with the Heat in the bubble that even though Major League Baseball is having this home field advantage for, you know, those top seeds, is it really home field advantage? Obviously, there's no fans. But the other thing, I've been speaking with some players over the past few days, they're not even sleeping in their own homes. I'm talking about the home team here. They're actually in their own bubble in like a local hotel.
Smart.
At each city. So, you know, they're not even able to sleep in their own bed. So I think it's, you know, more of a less home field advantage, if anything.
Yeah, that's smart stuff there. So, see, that's why you got to subscribe to The Athletic so you can get some of your baseball coverage, too, there. And you can follow the playoffs there. All right, so, Josh, when you look at the running game and you look at Myles Gaskin, I think you reported many times that he was the better player in training camp. Have you been surprised that what you saw in training camp translated to the regular season?
You know, maybe in terms of the workload, because anytime you add two veteran backs who are not just veterans, but also way more expensive than what they're paying Myles Gaskin, you know, it's his second year in the league. You got to think that the workload would be more even, but you know, Flo is sending a message that the hardest worker in practice, and not just that, that when they're trotting him out there, he's making the most of his opportunities. It really seems like Myles Gaskin is making that first defender miss almost every time he touches the ball. We're not seeing that from Matt Breida. We're definitely not seeing that from Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard's kind of if you look at his stats, so it's kind of nuts. He's got like 14 carries, 12 yards, 3 touchdowns, I think. So something around that area. So he's relegated to the short yardage goal, and you know, unless anything changes, I think Myles Gaskin is going to be that RB1 moving forward.
Yeah, no, I think that I'm with you there, and I don't think Jordan Howard was ever going to be featured on this team. I think he's there for the short yardage stuff, so you don't wear Breida and Gaskins out with those short yardage plays, because obviously it takes a lot of pounding, and so that's what you got the big guy there for. For those kind of situations, do you see anything changing in that room with the running backs?
I don't see anything really changing. I think they're going to continue to go with Miles, the hot hand, Matt Breida, they got to implement him more in some type of way, like in the slot back, you know, slotting him on the outside, maybe multi-backs in that backfield, because he is one of the most explosive players in the NFL. Like, the advanced analytics show that he's one of the fastest guys in the league. So you've got to be able to utilize him. But I think everyone knows their role by now in this season. And, you know, if anything, we got to look on the other side of the ball at the cornerback situation, because with Byron Jones out, you know, are they going to put Nick Needham back in there? I mean, it's really crazy with Needham's situation. He led the entire team in all cornerbacks in snaps last season, and he's basically been benched for two whole games this year. So, you know, who are they going to rely on to, you know, guard Tyler Lockett and all the many receivers that the weapons that Seattle has? Because Russell Wilson, again, we talk about it, it's going to be a huge challenge for Miami this Sunday.
No, with Noah, what'd you think of his last game here, second game starting? I thought he played well. I thought he obviously was a nice improvement overall.
Yeah, when we talk about Noah, really the one thing about Noah that I saw in camp is that really athletic in terms of if a ball was thrown his way, he would try to his best to make a play, and usually he would in terms of leaping and, you know, getting in the way, being a disruption. Well, the you know, these past couple of weeks, it's been less about him being a disruption in the passing game. It's been more about, man, this dude is actually a good tackler. Like, he can tackle in the open field. We saw that a few times this past week that, hey, if this guy beats Noah, this guy's going off for 20 yards, maybe a touchdown. But I think in the few instances that we saw Noah with an opportunity to make an open field tackle, that he wrapped up his guy and he's showing ability there. So, you know, he was burned week two against Buffalo, against, you know, obviously Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs. But in week three, I think we saw a lot of signs that showed that he is a sure tackler.
Your thoughts on the safeties? How have they played so far?
Yeah, I think with Bobby McCain, one thing that sticks out is that I talked to Bobby last week and I asked him, the way I phrased my question is, you know, how comfortable are you here playing safety in year two of your adjustment? Obviously moved over from corner to safety. And his response was, oh, he basically said that he's not comfortable, that I don't think he'll ever be comfortable. So it's, even though it is year two and there should be more comfort level there, he's not going to be comfortable because this is not a position that he grew up playing. So I think the best thing about Bobby is that he's the communicator on that back end. You know, they've got Kyle Van Noy up front, Christian Wilkins on the line. Bobby McCain really holds it down in terms of telling guys where to go back, you know, defending the pass. So they're going to need a lot of talking this Sunday against Russell Wilson.
I almost feel like, because, Josh, the way I've kind of read it since they took over, they want their safeties to have cover skills. They don't care if it's the strong safety or the free safety. Obviously, you should have some cover skills, and Bobby has that because he's a corner. And I almost feel like Bobby is taking one for the team, and that's and until the team finds the guy that they want to put there, they can't put him back to corner. And especially, you know, at nickel or dime, where he could really help you out, because he's probably better suited for a nickel or dime, not to play on the boundary, where Noah's probably better suited to be a boundary guy at the same time. But I almost get the feeling that Bobby knows that he's kind of filling in, and he's doing it, you know, kind of taking a bullet for the team. Do you get the same, you know, feeling too?
Yeah, definitely. I think his mindset is a lot better than, or a lot different than Micah Fitzpatrick. Obviously, I think we all know that situation, and, you know, a very similar scenario of, you know, them trying to move him in positions, and that can even extend up to the front seven with Raekwon McMillan, you know, not being able to, you know, a very good run stopper. And he actually started for the Raiders this past week, but, you know, wasn't able to adapt and defend the pass as well as Flo and Josh Boyer would have liked. So with Bobby, I think they like Bobby. And not just that they understand that this isn't his position. But again, I think it goes back to his communication skills that Because those translate. Those move all over the field. Doesn't matter if you're playing corner, nickel, back at safety. In Bobby's case, is that he's a talker and he makes sure guys know, or at least tries to put guys in position of where they should be pre-snap, which is a very big thing. And you know, I feel like every conversation we've had this call comes back to Russell Wilson because, sure, again, one of the best signal callers in the league, and you know they're going to need a lot of communication when they line up on Sunday.
I'm with you there. One more thing I got to ask you about the offensive line. Josh Tolentino, of course, from The Athletic, joining us every Tuesday at 12:30. You can catch him here. Before we wrap it up, Josh, what are you hearing from all the backup linemen? Because the starters have played so well, and I think by now we all would have expected a rotation, trying this guy, trying that guy, different combinations. In a short offseason, they nailed on the five guys that are playing really well. What are you hearing about the backups right now?
Yeah, one thing that stuck out today and talking with Chan Gailey just a few hours ago was that he's liked what Robert Hutt has done in practice. And, you know, we're not able to see that right now with them closing doors to practice. We only see them warm up and stretch and all that before they actually start practice. Mm-hmm. But you got to trust Chan's word that Robert Hunt is having a good practice here this first month, and that if there weren't such great communication and chemistry right now between the five best guys that they picked, you know, with Eric Flowers, Austin Jackson, Solomon Kinley, Jesse Davis, and who am I missing there? You know, I'm blanking out, but you know, those five guys that Robert Hunt, like what you alluded to, might have been featured already, but you know, all these five guys, they've held it together, and there haven't been any
Solomon,
huge.
Did you mention Solomon Kinley?
Solomon Kinley, okay. Yep, okay. The rookie from Georgia. So,
right.
If those five, if they weren't playing as good as they have right now, I think we would have seen Robert Hunt by now. But you know what? Everything's going so well so far, so good for them, and that they're going to carry that unit moving forward. And again, I really think they've really been impressive. Austin Jackson, again, I got a story coming out on him. I wrote about Solomon Kinley earlier, but the two veteran guys in the middle, I think that plays a big role that, hey, we've got rookie guys on the outside, on the sides, but in the middle, Ted Karras, we've got a veteran, we've got Eric Flowers, and then obviously Jesse Davis. So this unit has been impressive through the first 3 weeks.
And Josh Tolentino, always impressive with us every Tuesday at 12:30, Dolphin fans. So keep it locked here, and we'll podcast it like we do every single week. Follow him on Twitter at JCT Sports. Catch his work there at The Athletic. Josh, enjoy the baseball and enjoy the football, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, Big O, I appreciate it, man. Let's throw it back 1 second. Who's taking the dub on Sunday? I mean, this is a really tough challenge, like what we talked about with Russ.
What? Who's taking what? I'm sorry?
Who's taking the victory? The dub.
Dub. Well, I'm going to take Dolphins plus 6.5. I can tell you that. I think they could actually keep it close. You know, I think Seattle ends up pulling off a close one here, to be honest with you. But I think Miami's going to be really competitive. And I think they have a shot just because that secondary has been so bad for Seattle that maybe Fitz can actually hang in there with him and put up some points. And they're the ones that have got to travel 3,000 miles. So they're the ones.
Yeah,
we
got to remember, we're playing in Miami. It's you know, I'm about to walk outside here after a run, and it's 95 degrees heat index right now. It's definitely not that in Seattle right now. So I think this, like, you know, these September, October games are, you know, when the Dolphins really have to take hold of that home field advantage. And you know what? If we see the fits in the first half that we saw last week of, you know, damn near perfect, that I really do think that they have a shot at, you know, maybe Fitz outduels Russ.
Ever since I was a kid, my brother, standing in that, you know, in the Orange Bowl in the heat, and I constantly watch teams wilt in September and November, and Shula always loved those 1 o'clock games because he knew his team was going to take advantage of the conditioning. So you are correct. If you're a Miami team, you want Sunday 1 o'clock games in the first couple months of the season. That is an enormous advantage, and especially for a team coming from Seattle where they don't face the kind of humidity that they do here every single day. So I'm with you there. Hey, one more thing before I let you go. How in the F does Dan Quinn and Adam Gase still have jobs?
You know what? I'm going to be nice to, you know, those guys up in New York, New Jersey right now. I mean, it's really tough to see. I mean, and then you brought up Atlanta. I mean, you know, being a Chicago native, I thought the Bears were way out of that game. You know, they had no chance. And, you know, obviously they went to Nick Foles, and Nick Foles does what he does. I mean, he's just like Fitz magic that he gets in there and he wins. So, but you keeping it specific to the division, I really think that, you know, a couple more of these performances in New York, that Gase might be one of the first to, you know, get that phone call, get that nod in the office. But, you know, we'll see. The thing is, the one thing that I've been kind of talking about with just guys on the beat is Gase going to be there when the Dolphins play them? They actually play them in back-to-back weeks later in the season. They play, I believe, New York. In Miami, they host the Jets, and then they've actually got a bye week. And then the first week after the bye week, they travel up to MetLife. So a very interesting schedule positioning there. And, you know, who knows who's the coach by then. But I think he sticks around, you know, by that point in the season.
I hope he does, bro. It would be fun to beat him twice this year, because I think the Dolphins will end up beating him twice. I mean, watching Sam Darnold just regress is just scary under that guy. It is baffling to me. And then the other guy chokes away big leads left and right. It's a weird thing how those guys still have jobs. Follow Josh on Twitter, JCT Sports, and catch his work there at The Athletic. Josh, as always, my brother, thank you for taking some time. Enjoy the week and enjoy the football.
Big O, Tolentino Tuesday. I appreciate it, my man. We'll chat next week.
You got it, baby. You be good. It's a Tolentino Tuesday. There we go. That's how we get it done. Tolentino Tuesday. That's what it's all about. The Gase-Balaj connection is dangerous. That's what Super Boomshack says. All right, let's take a break. It's 104. It's the top of the hour right here on the show. Go for all of your CBD, THC, or hookah needs, you got to get on down to VSS West Pines at 12397 Pembroke Road. Yes, they have got legal THC. You've got to check it out. And they've got, of course, when it comes to CBD, flower, tinctures, edibles, for all kinds of reasons, whether it's pain, stress, anxiety, you name it. And don't forget, when you mention my name, you'll get 20% off. Tell the boys out there that I told you to get on down to VSS West Pines, 12397 Pembroke Road, and call them 954-613-3367. Legal THC, CBD, all of your hookah needs. You go to VSS West Pines.
Are you tired of watching the same old travel videos on the internet? Well, then check out MikeNoGoZones.com. A travel documentary that's breaking barriers. I go to the places that the media tells you to fear, where no one else dares to go. Baltimore, Opa-locka, south side of Chicago, and more. Go to MikeNoGoZones.com.
Hey, it's Big O for EJD Construction. Listen, I've been telling you about Eric for a long time now. Custom home builder for additions, home remodeling. We're not talking about a handyman. Maybe you want to redo that man cave. We're not going to a lot of live sporting events. So you want to improve that experience in your man cave? Call him 305-433-4843. Tell him that Big O sent you, and go to the Instagram page. You can see the before and after there. You'll be impressed. EJD_construction. Call them 305-433-4843 or go to the website EJDconstruction.com.
America's premium sports sedan is at Acura of Pembroke Pines, and this is how we do it. TLX, $259 a month. $259 at Acura of Pembroke Pines, the number one volume Acura dealer.